Show me the money!
Enjoy it while it lasts. Gambling gods, fickle bunch.
Oh, yeah.
So easily offended.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talks.
Here comes the money.
The Weekend Wager with Anita Marks starts now.
What's up? What's up? It is Weekend Wager here on 98.7 ESPN. Anita Marks with you tonight. Until midnight, we welcome you in. We got a jam-packed show. Obviously, following, we usually... We try to tee off, no pun intended. We try to tee off around 10 o'clock, but the Rangers and the Rangers postgame, so a little late start, but that's okay. We still got 90 minutes with you trying to help you win some money tonight. We've got a jam-packed show. We've got Stefania Bell, who's going to be joining us momentarily and doing a deep dive, getting us up to date in regard to what's going on with Tiger Woods and of course, his injuries. We will look forward to the Masters. It's an unfortunate situation that obviously transpired with Tiger, right? Like, I just feel like we went from the tournament that was his invitational that unfortunately he could not participate in, to him doing an interview with Jim Nance asking Tiger whether or not he thought he would be ready to play at the Masters, that he wasn't sure at that point. And then of course, the horrific car crash that he was involved in. And now, you know, No expectation, no talk, no nothing in regard to whether or not Tiger Woods will ever be able to play competitive golf again. You know, we could only sit here and pray to God that he'll be able to tee it up with his son. But will he ever be able to tee it up in a situation where he'll be competing to try to win another major? Because we all know, if you do follow golf and you know Tiger Woods, it's all about winning the majors. It's all about surpassing Jack Nicklaus and his quest to win the most majors of any golfer in the history of the sport. So, I'm hosting this show with a heavy heart. I'm going to have a conversation with Stefania Bell with a heavy heart. Obviously, you know, there's more things that matter than just sports or winning majors. And that is, you know, a Tiger being able to walk again, let alone, be able to tee it up with his loved ones. But I thought, you know, since this was obviously the biggest storyline this week, I thought it would be good for us to have Stefania Bell on just to kind of bring us up to speed. Listen, Stefania Bell is one of the best in the business. You know, she's shoots from the hip. She's so on point in regard to injuries, not just beyond obviously what's happened with Tiger Woods, but across the board. And she's so thorough and she's so professional. So I thought it would be great for us to have her on tonight. Looking at the Masters odds right now, prior to obviously this injury happening, I want to say Tiger, if I recall the last time I had looked, it was 30-1. But let's be honest, this Masters is not going to be the same. It won't be the same Masters. It won't be the same Augusta without Tiger Woods teeing it up. But Dustin Johnson, as it stands right now, he is the favorite. And of course, this tournament takes place the second weekend in April, and he's at plus 550. Brooks Koepka, who obviously has turned it around, the tournament that's happening right now, the WGC, he's at the top of the leaderboard. He's 10-1 favored to win the Masters. As of right now, I have to be honest with you, the last few weeks in the game that I've seen played from Brooks Koepka, to me, he's the one who should be favored. You know, he's recovered from his knee injury and his knee surgery, and he's feeling it, man. The juices are flowing. He's got that swag. So for me, 10-1, that's where my money is rolling right now in regard to winning the Masters at this stage of the game. But we'll see as we get closer, of course, to April, whose game elevates a little bit more. So we'll dive into some golf talk with David Berman coming your way at the top of the second hour at 11 o'clock. And Ty, who typically produces shows here, he's a huge NBA fan. He's going to be jumping on board with us around 11:15 with some NBA plays for you to take a dabble in on Saturday or Sunday. And Quincy Avery is also going to join us on the show at 11:30. So very interesting as we get closer to the NFL draft, which is going to take place. The first round Thursday night is actually on my birthday, which is April 29th. No need to send gifts to 98.7 ESPN. No, don't. Please don't. Quincy Avery is a quarterback guru, and he's working with Trey Lance. And I feel Trey Lance is the wild card in this draft. I tell you, many people might feel that it's Mac Jones. I don't. I think it's Trey Lance for a number of reasons that I dive into with Quincy Avery. And he's going to be joining us at 11:30. So like I said, we've got a jam-packed show. And of course, your calls, 800-919-3776. Welcome back to Weekend Wager. That's right, 98.7 ESPN brought to you by BetMGM. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. And without further ado, she's absolutely brilliant, and I'm blessed to call her a friend. She joins us now on the show to give us a little bit more insight on Tiger Woods, his injuries, and what his future could potentially be like. Stefania Bell joining us. So first and foremost, Stefania, if you can, kind of give us some more information in regard to all the injuries that he sustained.
Well, it's fascinating because there's always a little tidbits that you don't know, but they did give us quite a bit of information in the statement. And so if you walk through that statement that came from Harbor UCLA Medical Center, where Tiger was taken for trauma surgery, they said that he had comminuted open fractures affecting the upper and lower portions of the tibia and fibula. So the tibia and fibula are the two bones in your lower leg. The tibia is the larger shin bone that we're familiar with. And comminuted means fragmented, and open means that there was an open wound, that the bone punctured the skin. So both of these are serious situations. Comminuted fractures means you need to have people who are accustomed to putting these bones back together. I've had trauma surgeons tell me it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle back together sometimes, because you have to see how the pieces all fit. You want to try and restore proper anatomical alignment so that the fracture heals in a way that's going to be functional going forward. And then open means that you have an open wound. So your number one concern related to that is trying to prevent infection. So when they get to surgery, they're going to clean the wound. They're going to place the patient on antibiotics, and then they're going to use hardware to stabilize that fracture. And that's why the rod was put into his lower leg. The other thing I think it's hard for people to envision, but there's a lot of, they have to put the right tension on the bones. They have to really try and get the orientation correct. And that's why these surgeries can take so long between the process of cleaning out and realigning. And then it's important to mention that he also had hardware put into his foot and ankle. So in addition to the leg itself, it sounds like there were bony injuries within the ankle joint that needed reconstructing as well.
When the police officer, I guess, who's first on the scene, he was interviewed, and he said that, it was evident in the conversation he was having and how calm Tiger was that he, and of course he's assuming, that Tiger was kind of not even aware of just how horrific these injuries are. I mean, I would imagine adrenaline's running, looking at that scene, it's amazing, what that car must have gone through. But this is something that you quite typically see, right? Like somebody's adrenaline is running at such a high pace that you know, they're really not feeling. I mean, you know, you hear some of these reports where like somebody's in a car accident and then they become the Hulk and they're able to like lift the car up and get somebody out from underneath. Right. Like we hear these stories time and time again. Right.
The body has an amazing way, you know, of prioritizing what needs prioritizing. And sometimes you go into shock. And so you're really not processing all of what's happening at the time. Because as you said, there's the adrenaline and your body is really trying to conserve the energy to help you to get through the immediate moment. You know, one other thing about this injury, you know, we've heard it before on reports that it was a crush injury. And if you saw the front end of the vehicle kind of collapsed in, you can imagine the forces that were driven through that right leg. And one of the things they also mentioned in the statement was doing a surgical release of the covering of the muscles in that leg to relieve pressure due to swelling. Obviously, when you have an injury like this, you're going to have a ton of swelling. And in addition to the trauma to the bone, there's potential trauma to the soft tissues around it. And in the lower leg, you have compartments that are covered with thin membrane of tissue. I actually had a trauma surgeon say when he's describing this to patients, he talks about like a sausage in a casing because it's easy to visualize. And the pressure from the swelling builds up, and they have to release that tissue that is like the casing on the sausage to allow the pressure to be alleviated. And the reason that's important is not only for the muscle itself, but the blood vessels and the nerves that supply the muscles in those compartments. So that's not uncommon in trauma to have a procedure like that done, but then you have to monitor that. You have to wait, you know, the wound ultimately has to close from doing that pressure release. So this is an evolving injury that will take, you know, you don't necessarily know at the end of day one that you're completely done with it. And we also don't know if there may have been other injuries that were sustained that just didn't make the statement. So I think it's important for everyone to keep just a perspective that trauma is about prioritizing and stabilizing and dealing with the primary issues at hand. And there could be an evolution over time in terms of what we learn.
Again, Stefania Bell joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Reports on Friday were that he was transported to Cedars-Sinai. Can you give us some insight on why he was transferred and what's so significant about where he is at right now?
Well, to be honest, I can't tell you the reason that he was transferred. All I will say is that if he was able to be transferred anywhere, you take that as a good sign, because if he wasn't in a condition to be moved, he wouldn't have been moved at all. It's hard to know what the rationale is, so I won't speculate on that. But I will say, when there's an accident like the one he sustained and there's a trauma injury involved, the priority is to get the patient to a trauma center. And Harbor UCLA Medical Center is a level one trauma center. So that was the decision to make. And sometimes when you're looking at more extended recovery, then you're going to choose to go somewhere that might have different things that are available to it. Cedars-Sinai is affiliated with Kirtland Job Orthopedic Institute. You know, it's very strong orthopedic surgery group there. And again, that may or may not have anything to do with the reason, but that's what I know about that place. But I would say just the fact that he was able to be transferred at all is a positive thing.
You know, when this first happened and the reports and the injuries were out, I think including myself, a number of people just immediately went to Alex Smith, right? And you did such a phenomenal job with that, the documentary, that you guys did with, you know, his injury and his recovery and, you know, it's so deserving a comeback player. It's just, it's really, what a fascinating story. And it's just really phenomenal. But I think a lot of people were, Alex Smith was able to come back and play football. So immediately, you know, well, he should be able to come back and play golf. I mean, you cannot compare the two, correct?
Correct. Your answer is the correct one. it's, and I understand the tendency, because we do that. This is what we do in sports, right? We're always talking about this athlete versus that athlete. This is how we rank things. We compare things. It's how we talk about things to make them more familiar. And so I understand it's human nature to say, wow, we've seen an athlete who had a horrific lower leg injury who was able to do things that when you saw the injury, you wouldn't have thought possible. And so people naturally are wondering, especially the recency, like we just saw Alex's story, and as you said, comeback player of the year, which was just a recent honor that he was awarded. So it's very much in front of mind when this injury happened. I think the only takeaway I would say, and it is important to remember, every injury is unique. Every player brings their own independent medical history. Everybody's circumstances are different. Everybody heals differently. Alex had an infection that he dealt with, and as far as we know, that is not the case for Tiger right now, and you hope that remains the case going forward. But I think the takeaway that we should all appreciate is that Alex showed us that we should not put people into boxes about what we think is possible, because they will always surprise us. And, you know, a competitive driven athlete like Alex was able to get himself back further beyond what anyone, even he himself, thought he would be able to do. So nobody should be counting out Tiger Woods for anything at this point. And of course, all of us are just focused on him fully recovering so that he can have the life that he looks forward to with his kids, with his family, and all of those things. And that's what Alex started off. That's what all his focus on was, you know, I want to be able to play with my kids again. I want to be able to be a good father, be a good husband. And, you know, so the goals start often when you're recovering from a serious injury, you start with the small goals, and then as you achieve those, the goals can become bigger, and that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's just to end on this, you know, just, you know, besides, you know, Tiger's quest to win more majors than Jack and, you know, the Masters was right around the corner, but just to go back about a month ago and seeing, you know, him playing with Charlie, his son, in that tournament. Oh, it was just, you know, just the, you know, it kind of puts things in perspective. Like, what's more important, like winning another major or being able to tee it up with your son again? You know what I mean? And just, so we're all just praying, obviously, and we're all hoping that Tiger recovers from this so that he can at least get out there and play golf again. So, Stefani, so appreciate your time and your insight and your knowledge. You're so brilliant, and we're blessed that you spend time with us on the show. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, I thank you for having me.
All right. I mean, can't thank Stefania enough for joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Again, you're listening to Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk, believe in your game, believe in your bet, BetMGM Sports, here on 98.7 ESPN. Anita Marks with you here on 98.7 ESPN. Hour two of Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk, believe in your game, believe in your bet, BetMGM Sports. David Behrman joins us now, oversees all our gambling content on ESPN, whether it's our chalk site or anything digital. David, welcome in. How are you doing this evening?
Good. Did I ever tell you how much it excites me hearing Brent Musburger introduce you every time I come on here? It's great. Like, I am late on a Friday night. I'm going to go to sleep right after I get off this call. But when Brent introduces Anita and Anita introduces me, it just gets me. I'm awake now. So I love
I always tell this story. Like, somebody pinched me that I'm getting paid for a job to talk about gambling now, when the majority of my career I was called into the principal's office and slapped on the hand for talking about gambling on all my radio shows when I was using a bookie, as opposed to all the legalized gambling that's happening right now. And my response was always like, Brent Musburger gambles, Jim Nance gambles, like Al Michaels gambles. It's evident. They talk about it on their broadcast. Why can't I? And so it's just, it's kind of, it's become full circle that now Brent Musburger is like I've got a drop from him talking about this gambling show when I would use him. I would use him as an example, and I would use him as a crutch for me not to get in trouble with my program directors and my general managers by talking about gambling on my radio shows. So
Everyone always asks me now, like, you know, when we're talking about the growth of sports betting at ESPN and what we're doing, I always say you only got to go back 5 or 6 years, if not even maybe 4 years, to when the only time that people heard gambling on our network or anywhere else was when Brent Musburger would tongue-in-cheek it, when he would say that meant something to somebody. And it's like, now we've come to the point where we can fully talk about it, integrated shows. We have our own shows. You're on every day. We're doing Weekend Wager, where it's become a fabric of what we do, as opposed to, like you said, you getting called to the principal offices. I tell people that there was one time probably 4 or 5 years ago where I had heard in the background of the room I was working in back when I was in the stats department that somebody was in a survivor pool. And they didn't know what to do in week 17. And I turned to him, I said, what you do is you hedge it. You take whatever crappy team you had left in week 17 and go bet the crap out of the other side. And everybody looked at me like I had four eyes in my head. I'm like, no, let me explain to you the hedge. Now everybody understands it. But back then it was like a foreign species. What do you mean bet the other side? Well, you're guaranteed money one way, shape, or form. But now people are learning and picking it up, and it's what we do every day. And, you know, you introduced me as the guy who oversees a lot of the content. You're talking the content. I turn on my TV every day, and you're telling me what props to take. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
I know. It is. Isn't it fun? Which, by the way, I'm looking at the score right now. Golden State up 54-47 against the Hornets. There's about 2 minutes left in the second quarter. Go ahead.
I was going to say, we just cashed Draymond Green over 9.5 assists, just cashed, and it's not even halftime yet. So,
cha-ching. Well,
you have points and rebounds. Yep.
My best bet was points and rebounds combined 14.5. So, ching ching. But at the same time, like, I was expecting Curry to go off tonight. He's only one of two. He's only taken 2 3-pointers. That doesn't sound like him. He was 1 of 11 the other night. We're almost at the half. He's only got 8 points. I don't know. He's got 6 assists. Anyway, I went over on the total for Curry tonight. And I want to say, was it like 42.5, 41.5, something like that. But anyway, he's got 2 rebounds, 6 assists, 8 points, only 1 of 2 from downtown. That doesn't sit well with me. Curry's got to come out and have a better second half in order for me to win that. But at least I won my best bet. I was waiting for the round 3 matchups to come out. And I was going to try to have one of my matchups be my best bet, but they didn't come out in time. I went to the well twice, once on Thursday and once on Friday. Thursday it paid off for me in regard to Rory putting together a better round on Thursday than Justin Thomas. I went back to the well a second time on Friday. That did not work out well for me today, or I should say, what time is it? It's 11. Yeah, it's still today.
Can't fault you there. It was actually a really good call yesterday, and I tailed you again today. I know it didn't work out, but it wasn't because Rory played bad. He did have that 1-7 on the par 5, but JT was JT today, and he actually showed up and was awesome today. And he's someone that, you know, as we continue talking about this tournament, you know, he's 35-1. He's sitting right there. He's not far off. If, you know, if he has everything, his personal stuff behind him, and he can come out and shoot, that's a number I'd like to have on him. But I can't fault you for playing Rory again. And you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Rory at 33-1 is a good call also.
Well, let's break it down again. The leaderboard, you've got the WGC taking place right now in Bradenton, Florida. It was supposed to take place in Mexico, but because of the pandemic, this is our life. Brooks Koepka at the top of the leaderboard, 11 under. Then you got Horschel as well as Morikawa and Cameron Smith at 10 under. Following him is Fitzpatrick, Webb Simpson, Finau, Kisner, Reed, Archer. I mean, like, I'm just going down, you know, Rory is at 5 under. He's 6 shots back. I'm just looking, Justin Thomas is at 5 under. Jason Day. I'm looking at this leaderboard and, you know, it's just, you know, granted, like, it's kind of bittersweet, right, David? Like, you know, it's unfortunate in regard to the events that have taken place with Tiger, which, by the way, I'm really curious, over under, how many guys do you think are going to be wearing red on Sunday I wouldn't be surprised if everybody wears red on Sunday. What's your take?
That would be great. I mean, that would be great for them to do that. I mean, I don't know if some players, I mean, he obviously is still alive and, you know, not dead, but to honor him, the fact that he got injured, maybe that is something they do. I know Patrick Reed will be wearing his red, and I hope he uses his red to go win, as I took him in the column, and I have him at 22-1. He's right there. He had that little hiccup at the end, but yeah, to honor Tiger, that would be nice if they all went out there and wore red. We'll see. I, you know, a lot of these guys also traveled to the tournament before it happened, so maybe they didn't have it with them, but who knows? They obviously can go out and get one if they want a red shirt.
Yeah, I mean, and come on, they're sponsors, they're endorsers. I'm sure all they do is text somebody and say, overnight me a red shirt. So if everybody wears red on Sunday, needless to say, I'm probably going to watch Sunday with a thing of tissues. But with that being said, so Brooks Koepka to win it plus 250. Listen, he's won already. We saw just, you know, it's evident Brooks has turned that corner in regard to the knee injury. He's playing with swag. He's playing with confidence. And right now he's at the top of the leaderboard and he's the one that's being hunted. Morikawa is a guy that I liked coming in. He's one shot back and you could get him at plus 650. Finau, he's playing sensational. He's just, three shots back, 9, 10, 11. And you could get him at plus 750. But you like the guy that you're really focusing. Also, by the way, I like Horschel at 12-1. I like Kisner at 28-1. But the guy that you're focusing in on is on Reed. That's who you're feeling could win this.
Yeah, I like Reed here. I like them heading in. Obviously, he won it last year. Of course, he was at a different course in Mexico. But you know, as I wrote in the column, Reed is just he comes to play at these big events and he shows up. He has the Masters win. He has a couple of WGC wins. It's a new course for these guys, but he played it really well the first 2 days. He had a couple of bad shots on the back. I just like the way Reed plays and he plays these courses. He has that nice high right to left draw shot. He's hitting a lot of these greens. And the thing about this course, Anita, and I know you watched a little bit of it today, and I was driving around town listening to the PGA on the radio, and they were describing it as there's no bailout. Like, this is a shot. Like, these guys have to hit fairways. They have to hit greens. Mm-hmm. You saw what poor Victor Hovland did on his last hole where he was back and forth. It looked like me and you out there playing. but, like, I mean, and I don't know if you went to the tour website and actually looked at his shot by shot on that hole, the map. It's back and forth. I tweeted it out earlier. It's like, wow, I've done that many a times. But this is the type of course where you got to be accurate off the tee, which you've seen these guys do. Horschel hit his first 24 fairways of the first two rounds and got a little loose on the back nine today, which is why he dropped the shot. But Koepka's hitting fairways. Reed, Morikawa, they're really, really good shot makers hitting greens. And that's another reason why I wouldn't count out Rory McIlroy or Justin Thomas, who are 5 and 6 shots back. But as I stated at the beginning of this conversation, this is a course with no bailouts. And at any given time, somebody loses a shot, it's going to cost them, you know, one or two shots or four in Hovland's case. You really got to be careful. And I mean, it's going to sound captain obvious, but the guy who consistently hits fairways and greens on this course is the one that's going to take home the trophy on Sunday. And I know we make fun of it every single Friday, but if Tony Finau continues playing the way he's playing, he's going to get a win eventually. And again, I have him top 5, top 10 every single week, and I'm not going to take him to win until he does. I feel confident I'm going to get another cash out of him this week, but his putting has been insane the first 2 weeks. And if he continues putting like that, you're going to see him again in contention on Sunday.
And again, you could get him. He's 9, 10, 11. He's two shots back, and you can get him at plus 750. A guy that I've been calling the human ATM machine, and that is Willie Zalatoris, the rookie. Like, what is it? He's just not getting the respect from the handicappers. Right now, he's tied for 20th. He's 3 under. He had 5 birdies today. Like, I don't see him doing poorly on Saturday and Sunday. He's already in the top 20. I keep on telling people, you can get him at like plus 250, plus 350 to finish in the top 20. That's easy money. He is a human ATM machine.
And he's doing it every single week. And like you said,
every week.
First round.
Every
and
week.
He's played well today. And he's right there. And I mean, a lot of these guys are coming up there and winning money every single week. And you can't argue with the logic.
I'll be honest with you. Like, you know, it's great to sit here and pick a winner. Okay. I mean, and we have a lot, you, me, Bear, Joe Fortenball, Doug Kazarian. We all contribute to the column. Again, you could log on to ESPN.com, go to the chalk site. You can see it. But I'm telling you, David, where there's value and where people can make a lot of money is in the top 10, top 20, top 30, top 40. If you read our column, you know, we will tell you the guys, even like I like to focus in on guys like, you know, that, like, you know, Griffin, for example. Where's he at right now? Hold on one second. Here we go. Griffin is at tied for 26. You know, in the column I wrote, you know, he'll finish in the top 30. And again, it was at plus money. I want to say it was like a plus 175. You know, mm-hmm. if you do the research, you find the metrics, and you find the metrics that meet the, you know, the expectations for, you know, there's some guys that can like drive the ball a mile. There's some guys who just hit it right down the fairway. You know, every course is different, and there are certain attributes and metrics that you need in order to win at certain courses. And we do our research on the column, and we'll tell you who we think is going to finish. Like, I feel that like there's more value in where we tell people to gamble on guys to finish in the top 40, top 30, top 20 than us telling people who to win, you know? And again, I'm not 100%. Taking anything away from that. It's great to tell people who's going to win, because your odds are like exponentially, like, you know, plus, you know, you're talking about 20 to 1 or 33 to 1, but like, you know, there's such solid value and good money that people can make in, you know, notifying them who's going to finish in the top 20, 30, 40.
100% agree with you. And I was asked last week on another show about handicapping golf. And I said, yeah, hitting the winners obviously pays the most money. And, you know, this event doesn't have 154 players. It has less than that. But you're still, if you hit like a Patrick Reed, which I hope to hit, is 22 to 1. I have Cam Smith live. I took him in the column at 40 to 1. You know, the Bear hit one a few weeks ago. We had Doug hit Max Homa. You've hit Cantlay. So these guys, you know, I hit Webb last year. So it's fun to hit those. But you're 100% right. There's a lot of money to be won, not only in the top 10s, top 20s, but the matchups. I usually take, and I put it in the column as well, I take 3 or 4 tournament matchups a week. I know you're really big into the daily matchups, head-to-head matchups. I like to do it before the tournament starts and write it all 4 days. And lately, it's funny, not this event, but most of the head-to-head tournaments I take. Last week, I took 4 of them, and all 4 were over after Friday because somebody missed the cut in all 4 matchups and went 3-1 in those. But you're right, there is money to be won there. And if anybody wants to log in and read our column, the Bear, Fortenbaugh, myself, you, and Doug, we all give beyond just who to win. You'll see it. I have Patrick Reed not only to win, but I feel very comfortable that I can get paid 2.5 to 1 for him to finish in the top 10, which only one guy is going to win, but 9 other guys are going to finish up there. And Tony Finau is the perfect example of a cash register for somebody who has not won on tour in 5 years now, but he consistently makes me and you money because he finishes in the top 10 every single week. And if he makes the top 5 like he did last week, losing in a playoff, I got paid 3.5 to 1 on him because he finished in the top 5. And I'm going to continue doing that with guys that finish in the top 10. Justin Thomas does it. Rory McIlroy does it. And there's value in taking them on Saturday after they make the cut over the weekend and they're sitting there 4 or 5 shots back. Like you just said, like Willie Z, you can get paid off for him to finish in the top 20.
It's really, really unbelievable. All right, before I let you go, looking ahead to round 3, There's 2 matchups that I'm eyeing with plus money, and that's Kisner over Louis O at plus 102, and there's Horschel over Morikawa at plus 100. So those are 2 matchups that I like.
I would take both of those, and the one I was looking at it just before I hopped on the air was I like Jason Day tomorrow against Sergio, and I've made it, you know, I hope Sergio never sees me on the street because I fade him all the time. But I just, after Sergio played so well on Thursday, today you and I were both on Horschel, and I actually like Jason Day tomorrow in that matchup. He's a little bit, Jason Day is a minus a quarter, but still to me it's worth laying the quarter to get him against Sergio.
Great stuff as always. David, thank you so much. Always appreciate your time on Friday. Thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend and good luck this week, okay?
Thanks. Have fun.
You got it. You got it. David Berman joining us here on 98.7 ESPN.
I'm not discrediting anyone when I say that Cope should be the logo, because we have so many examples of guys that did things on and off the floor that were leaps and bounds for us to be where we are now. So I'm just saying present day. I think it was 224. It was only a year after the memorial. And, you know, it's just a refresher that this is the guy for us. He's the guy for me. He's my mentor, more than just an inspiration. I took a lot of knowledge and wisdom from that guy, and he's always around me. And Gigi's always around me. And I know that in the women's game, we want to continue to push things forward. But in our game, too, we want to set a standard and a precedent. Like, this is excellence. Kobe Bryant, logo. Yes, needs to happen. I don't care what anyone says. Black Kings built the league. It's exactly what I meant. It's exactly where I stand.
Kyrie Irving talking about Kobe Bryant becoming the logo. Let's bring in Ty. Of course, you know, producer extraordinaire here at ESPN Radio, making his way onto the airwaves. He's hosted quite a few shows and loves the sport of basketball. So I thought it'd be great to have him come on and share some of the picks that he likes heading into the weekend. Before we do, though, Ty, curious to get your thoughts, you know, from, was it Jerry West right now, right? From Jerry West to Kobe, do you think that they should change the logo?
I'm biased. Of course I think so, but Kobe's my favorite.
You are very biased.
He's my favorite athlete of all time. I think it's fitting, just like Kyrie said, he is everything you would want in a basketball player. He earned that nickname, the Black Mamba. He's a champion. He's a world-class star on both ends of the court. So, yes, of course I would vote in favor of Kobe being the logo.
It'll be interesting to see if that happens. I think considering, you know, all that has happened, and of course they keep it in house. It will be interesting to see what happens. All right. Let's look forward to some weekend games. Let's try to help people win some money. And let's start with our team at home. And that's of course the Nets. You know, the Nets, let's say, for example, on the money line, I know that, you know, it's hard sometimes to handicap NBA on the show because a lot of times the lines aren't out yet. And right now this line is not out, and you've got the Nets at home taking on Luka and of course the Mavericks. First things first, no KD. And from what I understand, he's going to be out a lot longer than what we than what we anticipated, but that's okay. The Nets have still been winning. Obviously, their biggest concern is on the defensive side of the ball. What are you hearing about KP? Will KP be playing in this game?
Oh, I have no idea if he's going to play. But regardless of whether he does or not, I'm all over the Nets. You just mentioned Durant. He's about to miss his seventh straight game. Very concerning, though, that we get to the All-Star break, and he will have missed 19 of the 37 games they've played. And especially for a guy who's the best player on the team, you want them at full strength going into the playoffs. But obviously, too premature to be concerned about that, but it is something to take notice. But as you said, the Nets have won 8 straight games. Only 2 of those have been close. They had a four-point win over the Suns. It was a game they were down 24, so they had no business winning that game in the first place, but they did win that game. Then they won in L.A. over the Clippers by 4. So of those 8 straight games, only 2 have been close. I'm all over the Nets. I understand that the Mavs have been playing a lot better as of late. They had won 7 of 9 coming into last night before they got blown out by Philly. But I'm all over the Nets here. You can make a legitimate argument right now that James Harden not is the best player in the NBA, but of all the players in the NBA, is playing as the best. And if all the people who criticize the Nets for trading for him, where would they be without him? So I'm going with the Nets tomorrow. I don't have a line on them yet, but I'll just say Nets on the money line.
You know, it sometimes, you know, a change of scenery does you right.
Yep.
Okay. And I think one thing that we're seeing here with Harden is that, you know, he's having fun. Right. He's having fun. He loves being here. It's evident that their chemistry is coming together. It really is a fun team to watch. And meanwhile, I know you and I have had this discussion on my Saturday show, and that is, listen, there's a reason why the Knicks got rid of KP, and that's because he can't stay healthy. And I truly believe that if KP, you know, I I think the injuries are going to continue through the season. I would not be surprised if the Dallas Mavericks do not make it to the postseason. I'm just throwing that out there right now. Let's take a look at the Knicks. They're going up against the Pacers. Sabonis has just been absolutely remarkable this season, but so has Julius Randle. So the Knicks, I want to say, what they're getting a point at home. How are you playing this matchup?
All right, so I'm going to take the Knicks actually in this game. And I think the formula for them the rest of the season, because they've been playing so well, is be good enough against the good teams, competitive against the great teams, and you beat on the bad teams. That's how you make your way to the playoffs. The Pacers are mediocre. They actually lost tonight to the Celtics. For the Knicks, Randle's an all-star. He's going to be the best player on the floor tomorrow night, in my opinion. Rose, Ntilikina, Alec Burks, and Quickly were all really good in that win over Sacramento. I think that at home again in front of that crowd, albeit a diminished version of the crowd, the Knicks playing a team on a back-to-back. I've got them winning this game. Indiana, only 4-6 in their last 10 games. Sabonis named to the All-Star team, so he'll give them some problems. But with that defense, I think they'll have more than enough to beat the Pacers. So I'll go Knicks +1. How about that?
I like it. You mentioned Quickly. I play a lot, as you know, I play a lot of prop bets. I'm really big into player prop bets, and I've been winning a lot of money with Quickly, by the way. For whatever reason, and granted, yes, I know he's young, new to the league. He doesn't have a lot of respect right now with odds makers. And so I've been playing a lot of I've been playing a lot of like total points, like, you know, points, rebounds, assists combined. And I've been winning with him. What have you seen from Quickly that has impressed you the most this season?
Oh, he's a spark off the bench. And a lot of Knicks fans are clamoring for him to play more, but maybe there is a method to Thibodeau's madness. Doesn't want to overexpose him too quickly, but no pun intended. He's got the floater. He's hitting the jump shot. And he just looks composed out there. It's been a while since we've seen the Knicks have a guard be able to take control of the offense. So Quickly has done really well in this role. Also, do got to mention this on the concerning side for the Knicks. You put up a $140 yesterday, which is great. What absolutely can't happen when you put up a $140 is for RJ Barrett to only score 12. So that's a little bit of a concern. I know they won the game and we're gonna wallow in that, but RJ Barrett can't put up 12 points in a game where his team scored 140 points. That's just something that stood out to me about that game. But I do have the Knicks winning tomorrow.
Okay. I'm trying to look at some of your other plays here. So Nets money line, Knicks +1. Let's talk about the Sixers, right?
Oh, I love this.
22-11. They're at home going up against the Cavaliers, and it's impossible to win. They're 14-2 at home.
Yes.
So you've got the 76ers. They're favored by 10.5. That line doesn't scare you at all.
No, this line could be 23.5, and I'd still take it. You just mentioned 14. You just mentioned they're 14-2 at home. Here's the deal with those two home losses. They lost to Denver. That was a game they had no Simmons and Embiid, no Seth Curry, no Tobias Harris. They lost at home to Portland. That was a game that Simmons didn't play. So with their full complement of players, they are 14-0 at home. And quietly, Tobias Harris has been playing well, 20 points on 50-40-90 splits. Joel Embiid, probably right now the leading candidate for MVP, and if he's not, the worst case scenario is he is trailing only LeBron James. But the Sixers -10.5, I'm all over that. The Cavs did beat Philly earlier this year, but they are now 2-8 in their last 10 games, and Philly is one of the three best teams in basketball right now. So I'm all over this. You can give me Philly -70.5, and I'm taking it.
Okay, and last but not least, you've got OKC at home against the Denver Nuggets. And the Thunder, they're getting 7 at home. Why do you like this game?
So I don't think the Nuggets right now, as presently constructed, are good enough to be giving anybody 7 points. And I get the Thunder, they're only 14-9 on the season. But OKC, getting hot. They've got a little 2-game winning streak cooking. They played tonight, they beat the Hawks, so they'll be on a back-to-back tomorrow. Jokic has been playing MVP basketball. But I don't know if you saw this yesterday. The Nuggets had one of the worst losses I've ever seen. They were down by 2 on a fast break, a 4-on-1 fast break. Jamal Murray's dribbling the ball down the court. all three other of his teammates go to the three-point line. No one goes to the basket. It's a wide open lane. No one goes to the basket, and they lose the game by two. They were down by two. They didn't need a three-pointer, but everyone went to the three-point line. No one went to the rim, a wide open lane, and they lost that game. So they're coming off one of the most embarrassing losses I've ever seen, and I've got the Thunder covering the 7 points. So I've got the Thunder plus +7 against the Nuggets, even though Denver's going to be at home, and I know it's going to be a tough game.
All right, so again,
actually, I'm sorry, it's in OKC, so that makes me feel even better about it.
It's in OKC. Yeah, so you've got the Thunder plus +7 at home. You've got the Knicks plus +1 at home. You've got the Nets on the money line. By the way, that line is not out yet. I'm sure the line isn't out because they're waiting to hear what the deal is with KP. Porzingis. Exactly.
He's expected to play tomorrow. He is expected to play, but no official status on that just yet.
And I still believe that the Nets would be favored, obviously, but we're just, you know, by how much. And of course, the Sixers by 10.5. Ty, thank you so much. Appreciate you, my friend. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Always fun hanging out with you. You enjoy the rest of your
show. You got it. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. All right, some NBA plays for you. Hopefully, we're going to help you win some money over the weekend. We get back. Quincy Avery joins me. He is the quarterback guru for a number of the college young men who are coming out each and every year trying to get drafted high in the NFL draft. And he's working with Trey Lance, quarterback from North Dakota State, who I feel is the outlier in this whole draft. He could change this whole damn thing. And I do a deep dive with Quincy, not only about college quarterbacks, but also what's going on in the NFL and in free agency with Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson and a number of other guys. Welcome back to Week in Wager. Nita Marks here with you, 98.7 ESPN. Of course, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports. Without further ado, I'd like to call him the quarterback guru. He works with a number of quarterbacks, getting them ready for the combine, for the draft. And then once they're in the NFL, they're like, I still need Quincy Avery. So Quincy, welcome into the show. Appreciate you. In looking at the quarterbacks that everybody's anticipating to go in the first round, I really feel that Trey Lance is that wild card. Before I start playing devil's advocate and start throwing out negative, what's negative about him, why don't you tell us, what are all the positives about Trey Lance?
Positives, he is a tremendous person and a player, right? So what I mean by person, he's a good guy, but he does all the things from a quarterback perspective that you would want, like a true leader, first in, last out mentality. And thinking about the things he did at North Dakota State, yes, he was a phenomenal talent. I think that's obvious. Arm strength is amazing. But he's also a guy who would make his own cut-ups for his Friday pass game meetings, right? There's no other college quarterback in the country who was in their offensive office going through cut-ups so that they could show their team film for their upcoming game. He's that dialed in. He's that aware. And then the things that he did when he went out on the field each and every week were so vast. And what I mean by that is he was responsible for all of his protection. Oftentimes the coaching staff would give him full autonomy there. They'll give him a part of a concept and have him figure out the remainder of the concept. So mentally, he's super sharp. Everything that he does screams to me NFL quarterback.
So not that scouts are telling me that he's going to be a bust. The conversation is risk-reward, right? And what a huge risk it would be to take him in the first round, hoping that eventually he pans out to be, as we like to call him, a stud quarterback in the NFL. So, how big of a risk-reward do you think that is for scouts and general managers?
I think it's honestly one of the lower risk reward. I think Trey Lance's floor is really, really high. So that takes out a large bit of the risk. If you had all the quarterbacks, if Trey Lance would have played this season and they had the opportunity to see him go through another 16 season like he went through the year before, he would be in a conversation. Right? And that, I'm very, very confident in. His skill level is so high. He's so young, and the things that we saw him do in that one season were unreal. anything you've ever seen anybody do. There's not a lot of college quarterbacks who go out there and do that in a high on a high school team right now. So I think that they'd be missing the mark if they had any questions about selecting into the first round.
Again, Quincy Avery joining us here on 90.7 ESPN. I like to call him the QB guru, works with a number of college players getting ready to come into the draft, let alone once they are in the NFL, they still come back for his expertise. What do you say to those who are concerned about the style of offense that he's playing in and how that would translate or maybe not translate to the NFL? Do you feel that whatever team goes out there and drafts him is going to have to implement a system very similar to what we saw the Baltimore Ravens do with Lamar Jackson?
Not at all. I think that he runs the most pro-like system out of any of the guys who are coming out in this year's draft, maybe for the exception of Mac Jones. So the things that he was asked to do when he addressed the line of scrimmage every play, it's what you do in the NFL. We went through this season, and since he wasn't playing, we kind of helped Deshaun out in terms of us watching film with him, talking to him week in and week out. And the amount of knowledge he had, just because he came from that NDSU offense, lent well to him having a leg up on really every class in terms of the mental aspect.
It's really going to be fascinating, Quincy, because I really feel, especially in the first round, I think he's that deciding factor, you know, and we always talk about, you know, how many quarterbacks are going to go in the first round? Will it be 4.5? Will it be 5? What will be the order? Will 4 quarterbacks go 1 through 4? All that stuff. With that being said, you know, there's some talk and speculation in regard to who the number 2 quarterback might be if it's not Trey, right? Like we all anticipated it to be Trevor Lawrence. But do you have any thoughts in comparisons or likability between Zach Wilson and Justin Fields? What's your take on those two quarterbacks? Because depending on whatever mock draft you look at, you know, some people have Justin going before Zach.
Yeah, and you'll have to forgive me. I've got a bit of bias just because I've worked with Justin. I've been around him so much more than I've been around time, like around. When I watched the tape, a larger body of really good work. So he has those 2 seasons of playing really good football. He has an arm that is as strong as anybody coming out for the draft this year. And I think the questions are for Justin, the questions that we see are, can he go through reads? Can he do those things? Well, I think that he can. I think that he did so well at Ohio State was his offensive play caller was so good that oftentimes the number one read got open. So if he's open, he move on to second and third. Zach, what we see from him, he's truly a super twitchy, can throw on the run, can throw off platform. So those things treat NFL executives the way that the game's moving forward. I would lean towards Justin out of those 2 just because I know that he can do it against a high level of competition. I haven't seen Zach Wilson do it against that high level like we saw Justin do.
What about Mac Jones? Mac Jones is getting a lot of love, you know, no bells and whistles, doesn't have the athleticism of the other quarterbacks, doesn't have the arm strength as the other quarterbacks, but comes from a great system. You hear a lot of great things in regard to how he was able to come in post Tua, take over that offense, his cerebral aspect, his accuracy, throws to wide receivers to get open, not when they are already open, which, as we both know, a lot of scouts love that when they see that on tape. What are your thoughts on Mac Jones, and do you think he goes in the top 15?
I mean, I've heard the talk of him going in the top 15. It's really hard for me to see a guy who doesn't move in the pocket great going that early. Just the way that the NFL is going, right? The trend that we see with quarterbacks, if you can't create as a quarterback with your legs, extend plays, when the defense gets you, which is going to happen, especially as a young quarterback, if you don't have those answers with your legs, it's going to be very, very hard for you to see sustained success. So I think that Mac Jones can be successful in the NFL, but I just think it's going to take him a little longer than it's going to take a lot of the other guys. So I have concerns about him doing that, but I also think that he's a really talented guy, and he should get a shot. I just think that it would be, if I was an executive, I'd be picking him a lot later than him.
Again, Quincy Avery joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Before we let you do you go, let's talk about some of the NFL quarterback storylines out there, right? And one in particular, a guy that's very near and dear to you is Deshaun Watson. You know, it seems like Deshaun Watson's camp has stuck their heel in the sand to say, I'm not playing for this organization anymore. And reports today are that the Houston Texans aren't even fielding calls, which I think is really ridiculous. Let's be honest, Quincy. I mean, at least field the calls. See what's out there. What if a team's calling you, willing to give you 4 first-round draft picks for Deshaun Watson? I think it's just ridiculous if these reports are accurate. But your thoughts on Deshaun? I mean, there's some folks that are telling me that there's a chance that we might not even see him play this coming season. This might be a season where, you know, he's not even going to be able to play because the Texans, he won't play for the Texans. The Texans won't even consider trading him. How do you think this all pans out?
Yeah, I think that as someone who is that talented, I think that they're going to have to start fielding calls. It's kind of irresponsible on their end to not at least understand what the market is for him. That's really your responsibility. And I think Deshaun has been pretty clear about what he wants to do and what he plans on doing. That's him planning on getting traded and playing for a different team in this upcoming season. Me knowing him as well as I know him, it's hard for me to see him waver once he's kind of made a decision like this. And I think that he's made a decision like this for good reason. So I'm definitely interested to see how it plays out. And I really hope for him that it turns into the best situation possible.
Yeah, you and me both. I mean, he's so gifted. He's so talented. He's so fun to watch. And you know, God willing, he lands up on a team that actually, you know, is in it to compete and actually win it. That would be fantastic. Let's end on this because, you know, also this week, a lot of news in regard to Russell Wilson. The Athletic reported that he sat in the owner's box or one of the boxes with Roger Goodell watching Tom Brady not get touched, not just in the Super Bowl, but let's be honest, I think that like that offensive line only gave up 1 sack in the entire postseason, which is just ridiculous, and was fuming, quote unquote, The Athletic reported. He's not happy with Seattle. He's not happy with Seattle. He's not happy being beat up week in and week out, and he wants out. And he listed 4 specific teams that he'd be willing to go to: the Saints, the Cowboys, the Bears, and there's one more that I'm forgetting. But you know,
the Raiders.
The Raiders. There you go. The John Gruden. Are you kidding? John Gruden would die to get his hands on Russell Wilson. But you know, with that being said, what are your thoughts on Russell Wilson and what's going on with him in Seattle?
You know, the more we start to understand and kind of what quarterbacks are going through, they're asked to be essentially members of the front office coaching staff at every other moment other than when the team wants to call plays and make acquisitions or handle the roster. So as guys continue to understand like what their leverage is and everything else that they're being asked to do, you got to understand that they're going to start asking for more power. You're going to ask me to do all these other things. I need to also be included in the decision-making. And I understand that. I understand where Russell Wilson's going. Going with the Scott process. So I'm kind of confused by the list of teams that he selected, right? Because those teams don't look like they're set up for success immediately. And I wonder if his thought is, I want to go somewhere and have the same type of input that Tom Brady had with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers so he can turn a team into a Super Bowl contender, and he feels like he has that level of influence with one of those organizations.
It's really fascinating. Again, you know, Adam Schefter, I mentioned this before on the show, Adam Schefter has the over-under of 18, and he took the over, Quincy, of quarterback changes. We've already seen, of course, Matthew Stafford in golf. They made the switch. Carson Wentz now in Indianapolis. So we've already seen 3. Ben Roethlisberger looks like he's going to work out that deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers and come back for another year with a lot less money. But man, do you ever thought that you could envision a year where, in my opinion, and I'm sure you agree with me, right? Because this is what you do for a living. But I think the quarterback position, the most important position in all professional sports, and you're looking at over, Schefter is anticipating over 18 changes. Isn't that surreal?
It's going to be mind-blowing to see. I don't think it'll get to 18. It'll probably get to 10, 12 area. But for these guys to be the focal point of an organization, that many be trying to get on the move, it really says a lot, kind of about the state of quarterbacks in 2021 and where we're going as a league.
Quincy, I so appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on.
You're listening to Weekend Wager, brought to you by BetMGM Sports. Enough talk. Believe in your game. Believe in your bet. BetMGM Sports here on 98.7 ESPN.
This is the Weekend Wager with Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.